I don't want you to say anything to Simchala on the message. I don't want her to hear. So be careful. Well, sometimes you could get all excited about things. You don't do that.
Well, hi, everybody, and welcome. This is Dave. Was there a question or a discussion already? Did I interrupt you? Good gossip?
I hear an echo.
Okay.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, I hear the echo, too. Anyone on a cell phone or on a computer phone, if you would mute, please. Hopefully that will take care of it. I was reviewing the answers to the questions that many of you sent in about what would be the most important question you have about this topic and what would you like to walk away with, and I'm hoping that I'm incorporating the answers and the discussion in our discussion so far. We've covered the first three steps. Today we're going to cover steps 4 and 5 of the roadmap. Decide what to change and map changes of your money story. And there's a lot of mind and brain sciences in this, and I think they're really two excruciatingly important steps for us to focus on. But I want to open it for any questions or comments, clarifications that you have so far. What would be helpful for us to talk about? Any questions, any comments, any clarifications even about something that we've talked about? How is this seeming so far? I know we're not even halfway through the roadmap, but how does this seem so far? Is this what you expected, and are you beginning to see some potential usefulness for work with your clients or even work on your own money story?
Definitely. Also for myself, also for my clients, I think it is logical. It is extremely detailed. And I hear noise.
I hear some background. Remember that your microphone will pick up any ambient noise, anything in the background. So if you're not speaking and doing anything other than breathing, put it on mute, *6, and remember to unmute again if you're ready to comment. Go ahead.
Okay, so this is actually better than I thought it would be because it makes sense. It has a fantastic formula that is so detailed that if one area is not helpful, it's going to catch you in another area.
Okay. Well, thank you for those comments. And I think you'll find as you really master the process and kind of digest the whole process of the roadmap, a systematic way of listening to a story and creating a new one, that you'll find that this same system, it's a proven system, that it will help to address whatever story you're focusing on, whether it's a life story with a client, a wellness, a career, a relationship, a money story, mastering state of mind, that this process is fundamental to deconstructing and understanding a story and creating a new one. So hopefully it will be a model that you can apply in other areas. And I know it's premature to talk about it yet because we're not even halfway through it, but I'm glad you're beginning to make some sense of it and see some possibilities.
Yes, definitely.
Super. Any other thoughts or comments or questions?
I have a question. I have a comment. This is Deb.
Okay, if you'll identify your name, I will answer the question.
This is Deb from Indiana.
Oh, welcome. Deb, how are you? I'm sorry I didn't recognize you. How are
That's
you?
That's okay. I'm fine.
All right, good.
I just wanted to say that I think something that's become really clear that makes things easier is to recognize that any type of change is a process and not, like you would say, Dave, an event. And the more I internalize that, it makes it easier when I'm dealing with people to kind of guide them on that as well so they don't get so impatient or frustrated. And it gives them a little more self-tolerance. So I really like that. And that's my comment.
And I really appreciate that, Deb. And I think that's really important. It's something, as you know, that I incorporate in mentor coaching on a regular basis to engage the client to look at the process, because that's the model that they're internalizing that they'll ultimately be able to do on their own to look at and assess the process, to measure progress along the way, to see where they are, and to really navigate that map that they're creating from where they want to be to where they from where they are to where they want to be. So that's something that I regularly engage and highlight with somebody as a way just of affirming a process, especially if somebody is feeling kind of overwhelmed and feels like they're just starting out, to really look at the big picture to see how far they've come, you know. And it's like, you know, in Texas, I can't really use this without some trepidation now. My wife is in a PhD program at Texas A&M, so there's the story of the Aggie who began to swim across the Mississippi, decided about halfway across he couldn't make it, so he swam back. So that's we want to look at the big picture with somebody. And I'm impressed. Deb is somebody who has done both the New Life Story Wellness Training and the New Money Story Mentor Training. So I'm really grateful that you're here, and I welcome your comments, and I'm glad it's useful even to reiterate it, because I know you're very familiar with the material. So thanks very, very much for coming and commenting.
Thank you, Dave.
And for not, you know, getting, you know, too weary if you hear a story or more that you've heard again. You know,
so, no, it doesn't do that to me, Dave.
Do you realize the pressure that's putting on me to come up with new stories for these last two seminars? Thank you, Deb. Any other comments, questions, or things that you'd like to talk about before we move into the material?
Dave, this is Wes Gilliam. Hi there.
Welcome, Wes. How are you?
Good, thank you. My question for you is the material here, there's so much here. I mean, this is something that you can kind of chew on for the next.
Could I get a mute by everyone who's not commenting, please, because there's ambient noise that your microphone is picking up comments. So please mute if you're not commenting. Go ahead, Wes. Sorry for the interruption.
That's fine. There is so much information here. There's so much to chew on. You can really chew on this for the next 6 months or so. Is there additional material, or is there a process by continuing through on the new money story that you have available?
It would be hard to believe that I didn't pay you to ask that question. I have.
Yep, it
sounds actually
very suspicious.
The training for 2016 starts day after tomorrow. I have a new money mentor training that results in a licensed specialty certification, New Money Story Mentor, and it's at that website. I'll send around a link, but it's www.newmoneystorymentor, and it's an entire spectrum of dealing with this process applied to a number of stories in addition to money, from wellness to career, relationship, all of that. And for people who might think about it, using this in working with couples or retirees or with executives or people who want to become a financial or money coach, I'll send a link for this because it's something that will start this Wednesday at 5 p.m. Eastern as a training. There are a couple of seats that are left. So thanks for asking that. I'll be sure and send that around.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, and your commission check is in the mail. anything else before we start?
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to talk in this seminar about writing new software. This is about steps 4 and 5. Decide what to change and map changes of your money story. We've discussed the concept of your money story, your relationship with money, and the first 3 steps of change, how to recognize, own, and assess your money story. In this seminar, we'll discuss the next 2 steps. There's a lot of information here, and I want to be able to get it to you, so I would just say strap your seatbelt, and I know that it's a lot, and I prefer a true seminar, a give and a take and a discussion, but there's so much I want to convey to you. I've chosen to do this and hope that you'll understand and that you can come back, as Wes said, to kind of metabolize it in your own way. So step 4, decide what to change in your money story. I'm going to describe a study and have you guess the biggest change impact. Ben Fletcher at the University of Hertfordshire in the UK devised a study to get people to break their usual habits. Every day, the subjects would choose a different option from poles of contrasting behavior, like lively, quiet, introvert, extrovert, reactive, proactive, talk about sports, talk about business. They would choose one and behave that way for the entire day. Additionally, twice a week, they would stretch to eat something that they had never eaten before, and twice a week, they would read something they would have never read before. So, what do you think the biggest change in this group was? The remarkable finding was that after 4 months, the subjects had lost an average of 11 pounds. 6 months later, they'd all kept the weight off. Most had continued to lose weight. This wasn't a diet, but it was a study focusing on change and its impact. Here's what happened. When people began to focus on the actual experience of choosing and making routine behavior actual choices and decisions rather than just habitually choosing a default mode without consideration, they became aware that every behavior, for example, every bite of food was a choice, so they could reflect on whether that choice was there in their own best interest. And they ultimately came to think about, is this bite in my best interest? Because every decision they made was a process of active choice. So once becoming aware of actively making choices, we can decide the most informed and strategic possible for us. Now, remember, your identity is not your behavior or habits. A habit is not a definition. It's simply a choice that gets repeated, a collection of repetitions. If you define yourself by what you do or by your habits, it'll be harder to change. So for me, that's a coachable moment. If a client describes himself or herself as if, well, that's who I am, or I'm a procrastinator, That's why I have my agreement, to be able to interrupt each other at any point so that we can examine that at that moment. Every action is a choice. Every thought and feeling is a choice. Now, remember in last seminar, we discussed the equation, belief drives behavior, behavior drives performance. So for this step, decide what to change. I want to add an equation, and it captures the principle that we either create our reality or we agree to it. And this is the equation, event plus response equals outcome. Remember, this is all in your outline. Every outcome you experience in life is a result of how you respond to an event in your life. Achievement's an outcome. It's the result of responding in certain ways. It's not what happens to us, but our response to us, but our response to what happens that makes the difference. So remember this essential principle for ownership of your story. In adulthood, you either create or allow everything that happens to you. You worked out, so now you feel more energy and alertness. You didn't attend to marketing, so now your business is slumping a little. You spend more than you earn, so now you have debt. Choice is also part of a mindset. The antithesis of choice is also a mindset with its own text. And here's how that sounds. Fate, luck, circumstance, bad traffic, things just happen. I don't think I can do it. The absence of the awareness of choice limits possibility. A footnote here. Whatever you're doing that you can't control is your addiction. You can be addicted to a substance, a behavior, such as spending beyond your means, or a process, such as debt, to a certain kind of relationship, or to compromise results. Money is energy. Anyone addicted to anything has difficulty regulating energy. So let's look in the creation of story at obstacles and desires. So here's a notion to consider. What you seek is camouflaged in what you fear. To say that just a little bit differently, show me an obstacle and I'll show you a desire. In other words, rather than strategizing to overcome or avoid or defeat an obstacle, simply consider not creating it. It's there when you create it. Consider using your energy to generate something else instead. Now, there's a secret here. An obstacle is the unconscious mnemonic of desire. It reminds you of what you want, but it makes it safe to want if you're afraid. Here's an example. There was a cartoon sequence. A dog was straining at its leash, barking ferociously at a cat, as if to say, just let me at him. And the next frame, the cat really wasn't too shabby, looked really mean, at least as big as the dog. But the dog was straining and barking. And then suddenly the leash snapped. So the dog was free to go after the cat, but he looked astonished, scared to death. He quickly ran back, tied a triple knot, then again could strain at his leash and say, just let me at him, and bark ferociously. Now, here's another example of this dialectic of obstacle and desire, two sides of the same coin. When viewing a scene in a film you don't want to see, you cover your face with your hands as if to say, no, I don't want to look. But then the desire creeps in and you peek through your fingers at what you're drawn to see. The obstacle makes looking acceptable. So when you find yourself focusing on an obstacle, for example, I can't find time to exercise, I can't put away any savings, reflect on the underlying desire. And here's the key. When you're ready to consider that you create the obstacle, you're then ready to consider the possibility of not creating it. Imagine what it would be like not to create your obstacles. The primary reason that people give for not participating in a retirement plan include fear of finances, inertia, procrastination, because of other pressing financial demands. Now, the way you frame an issue makes a good deal of difference. Here's an example of that effect. When companies automatically enroll their employees in retirement savings plan, the employee has to decide to opt out to not participate, to make a choice that says, I will not save for the future. So when it's automatic, it's 100% initially, then it levels out in this frame to 86 to 42% of people continue to save for the future. Now, at other companies where it isn't automatic, from the beginning, somebody has to choose to opt in, 20% participate. A four-fold difference just on the basis of how something is framed for something as crucial as their retirement future. So just a thing to think about because of the way it's framed. And here's a huge non-secret. You can set up your own automatic contributions to automatically deduct a set amount from your checking account the first of every month to deposit in your retirement account. A good decision, a good choice that you only make once. Now, let's look at change and the brain. This is really, I believe, crucial to understand when we engage change and become catalysts to change for our clients. Both our minds and brains automatically resist change. Let's first look at how the brain opposes change so that we can use this information to facilitate success. One, people have prior knowledge that affects how they hear and respond to new information. So what we need to know, existing knowledge is the beginning of new knowledge. It's where new learning starts simply because it can't happen any other way. And that's where our client is, not where we are. Two, the prior knowledge is physical, real, and persistent as a neuronal pathway in the brain. Facts and beliefs are anatomical realities in the brain. You can't simply remove it or overwrite something by giving a better fact or a better belief. But two things, they atrophy with disuse as other networks take their place, and as change occurs as an internal process, a new belief will replace the old. And a teacher knows that intuitively, that a teacher can't simply present a simple explanation and remove an existing neural network from a student's brain. Three, if we ignore reality, it will get in the way of new information and change. So as we mentor and co-create change, we have to start where the client is, not where we are. And people are not always aware of their prior knowledge. And number four, when changes occur in a systematic and consistent way, new connections are made in the brain. New maps are created. And think the roadmap system here. So let's look specifically at how the brain opposes change. Since the brain has a mind of its own, we need, I believe, to consider how our brains work in order to strategically plan change. Each of these precepts will help you craft your new money story and facilitate change in your client. One, change generates discomfort. Activities that we repeated that have become habits have become hardwired into the brain. Neuronal pathways, neural networks, the highways and villages in our brain have become etched by repeated habits to create efficient operation to make routine behaviors easy. We don't have to think about the way we drive to work the same way. Each day. Because of this default mode, we can think about other things or listen to a book. This default mode is energy efficient because the brain is freed up to do other things. Now, when these habits are confronted and we have to change, the automatic pilots in the midbrain get disrupted. We feel discomfort. The prefrontal cortex, the thinking brain, has to get busy with more energy and attention to process this thinking. So basically, it's work to change. The natural inclination is to resist the stress of change and to preserve the default habit. The brain naturally resists change because from an evolutionary perspective, the brain has come to hardwire behavior that we do routinely to save energy. So it's been highly adaptive. The promise of change is to develop a new, better default mode. The brain just doesn't know it yet, so our minds have to lead the way. Some remarkable new research shows that consistently repeating new experiences even alters gene expression. Beliefs alone can turn genes on or turn them off. Ray Kurzweil, one of my favorite and most challenging authors, said, civilization advances by extending the number of important operations which we can perform without thinking about them. And that's from his book, The Singularity is Near, When Humans Transcend Biology. Two, change creates dissonance. We see basically what we expect to see, what our radar has been coded for. In fact, when we don't see what we expect, the brain's error detection mechanism reads as if something's wrong. The brain has an innate capacity to detect what neuroscientists call errors, the difference between expectations and perceived reality. It registers as a sense that something's just not quite right. Since a portion of our medial frontal cortex has the job description to recognize and correct errors, consider, for example, the emotional expense of debt. The real expense of buying something you can't afford is that you have to pay more for it. Then the emotional expense of your mind and the dissonance in your brain to recognize that spending is different from affording. The error detection mechanism can't be fooled because it knows you're spending money you don't have. Then you have to pay the interest, triple work. You can deceive others, even your own mind, but your brain always knows. Now, the good news, this neural machinery can both recognize and correct errors to optimize behavior by responding to mistakes. Now, this is great if we remember to discern whether it's a mistake or a neural response to change itself. Number three, the brain is a prediction machine. Let me give you some numbers. Do you have a pen? 1, 2, 4, 5, 7, and 8. Look at that list and see what's missing. Usual guesses are 3 and 6, maybe multiples of 3. Consider this, nothing's missing. I gave you a complete list of 6 numbers. Everything that's there is there. What's missing, if you thought it was, is inside your head. It's informed by a pattern of expectation. Now, this is huge in writing a new story. Sometimes you have to outsmart your brain. When anything occurs 2 times in a row, the brain predicts a 3rd repetition. A stock goes up 2 quarters in a row, the brain predicts a 3rd rise will follow. A company has increased, it's a true story, has increased profits 26 quarters in a row of increased profits per share every quarter for 26 quarters. Now, their projected earnings growth is 24 cents per share for this current quarter, which is also a increase in earnings growth by 3 cents. Instead, they announced earnings of 23 cents per share. They still gain, still the 27th quarter in a row, but it wasn't quite what was expected. The company loses $1.5 billion in market value in 5 minutes. What changed in those 5 minutes? The company's intrinsic value and balance sheet, or the mindset of the investors? J. Paul Getty said there are 3 key elements to getting rich. Wake up early, work hard, find oil. So you can see how brain prediction or pattern is also the basis of many jokes. Listing 2 things and a 3rd sequitur, set up, non sequitur, set up, payoff. The human brain automatically imposes patterns and predictions on repeated events. This makes it a challenge for us to override both emotion and brain pattern expectation to make, at times, wise and balanced decisions. We need to be sure that we predict or envision the right things. 4, behavioral reinforcement can backfire. Your COO of a company determining a policy about employees being on time. Which do you think works better, threats or reinforcements? The answer is neither. Both will likely backfire because studies show 2 things. Threats work short-term but draw attention away from work and back to the problem that created the behavior. And secondly, recognition for someone being on time actually raises anxiety and reinforces the neural patterns connected with lateness. So, in other words, remember what we talked about, you get what you focus on. Quantum physics and neuroscience shows us that what we focus on aligns the configuration of energy in our brain. Both of these strategies focus on something negative, so you're going to get something negative. Now, we assume people will receive information about change and use it to better themselves. Well, the brain says, not so fast. In fact, being told what to do results in an innate opposition. The brain's natural homeostasis says, avoid change. That's why, which you know in coaching, that asking the right question has more power than giving people the right answers. That appreciative inquiry can get you much better results than seeking out and solving problems. 5, motivation is not essential. Someone does not have to be motivated to do something. I work with pro athletes and actors. They get up in the morning, most of them in the morning, and work out at the gym. They're not motivated to do that. They don't like doing it, but they do it anyhow because they know that that's what they need to do in order to do what's next. You do not have to be motivated to do something, but you do need two things. You need a plan and to stick to it. 6, emotions can change brain functioning. When emotions are triggered, the brain chemicals of dopamine and adrenaline are released to prompt toward action and away from creativity and assessing knowledge. This is why self-talk is limited. Change your thoughts to change your behavior will work until emotion gets activated. Emotion especially of excitement or of stimulation or of stress. As soon as this kind of emotion is triggered, reason runs and logic leaves. When there is the possibility of a reward, dopamine is released to produce an excited state in response to anticipation of a reward, like a risky stock investment, approaching a slot machine, or a blackjack table, or going into the sale aisle at Neiman Marcus. Now, here's what we know now. It's not the reward that causes this spike in dopamine, which is what we thought for a long time. You do something that should evoke a reward. You do the behavior. You get the reward. Dopamine is released, and it entices further behavior. That's not what happens. Instead, it's the anticipation of reward. For example, when gamblers were studied and hooked up to an fMRI, the brain, their increased brain firing and dopamine spike as they approached a slot machine, before they ever actually touched it, they got the hit of dopamine. Same thing with compulsive shoppers. They get the hit of the excitement of spending money before they ever actually purchase things, which is why at times there's a kind of buyer's remorse because it doesn't create the excitement they expected that it would create to have it finally, or even a long-desired object, because they already had the spike in anticipating it. Their timing was a little bit off. Now, secondly, the less predictable a reward is, the longer and stronger the dopamine neurons fire, creating more of a natural high. Now, remember from college psychology, if a laboratory mouse is given regular predictable reward for pushing a lever, the behavior stops quickly when the food pellet rewards stop. But if the food pellets are infrequent and unpredictable, the mouse will keep pushing the lever almost indefinitely. This behavior is not confined to laboratory mice. Watch a bank of slot machines in Vegas, and you'll see the same scenario, lever pulling, reward pellets. The moral here, people easily fall into the unconscious pursuit of dopamine and its accompanying pleasure, despite obviously illogical downsides. Number 7 in how the brain opposes change, stimulation and performance. Stimulation, also known as a little bit of stress, enhances memory and learning. The things that excite us provide activation, a little bit of stress short term, enhances learning. But the time window here is up to about 2 hours. For longer periods of time, especially 4 hours or more, with sustained stress, things go the other direction. Learning capacity declines. That means with sustained stress, people make bad, emotionally charged decisions. The most, and this is crucial, I believe, the most important success strategy for clients I have worked with, I believe for everyone, is regulation of states of mind and management of emotion. 8, closure to novelty. Studies show that even highly accomplished people close themselves to novelty as they get older. Now, the factor here is not their age, but how long they've been doing a particular thing, such as been in a particular business. People who stay in one place, in one position, get most entrenched. An example of where I've seen this kind of resistance, is in facilitating family succession of business. The patriarch founder passes the company he founded 36 years ago to his 2 children to own and manage. It's a challenge because everyone involved changes roles and relationships and titles. Now, these last 2 principles, I believe, are absolutely huge in strategizing change. 9, neurogenesis is the creation of new brain cells. And 2 things above all others create neurogenesis: an enriched environment and exercise. An enriched environment of intellectual and emotional stimulation creates more complex brain structure, especially at the hippocampus, the site of memory and creativity, to co-create, to stimulate thinking, to challenge, to story bust. Now, the hippocampus is the part of the brain especially connected with creativity and memory. Mice from an enriched environment have a 15% increase in the number of their hippocampal cells. Physical exercise increases the number of cells in the hippocampus by almost 100%. And these studies have been consistent and have been more recently replicated in non-invasive human studies, London taxicab drivers, and University of Hamburg medical students, same results and the same percentages. Consider this. Another related finding, chronic stress impairs neurogenesis. The number of cells in the hippocampus, the site primarily of creativity and memory, declines. Number 10, neuroplasticity simply means that the brain remodels itself. This has been called the scientific revolution of our time. A region of the brain that originally had one job can be trained to perform another. The brain can reassign job descriptions of neurons, rezoning and developing cortical real estate. Some NASA astronauts did a training experiment in which they had headgear with a visual apparatus that exactly reversed everything. Everything was that was up was down. Everything was reversed 24 hours a day. So they had to move exquisitely carefully to think through and translate every move that they made. Then about day 25, they noticed something remarkable. Their brains automatically made the adjustments. Their brains had rewired. They didn't have to think about it anymore. The brains had developed new neural pathways. Now, another group of astronauts in the headgear were given a day off out of the helmets for 24 hours at day 15. When they put the headgear back on, it took them 25 days from that point on to make the adjustment. The point here is consistency of creating new patterns, new habits. When we write a new story and change our minds, we change our brains. Step 5, map changes. A man approached J.P. Morgan, held up an envelope, and said, "Sir, in my hand, I hold a guaranteed formula for success, which I will gladly sell you for $25,000. Now, remember, this was over a century ago, and that was still some real money then. Of course, I consider when I have $7 in my pocket, I think I'm flush. Sir, J.P. Morgan replied, I do not know what the envelope has in it. However, if you show it to me and I like it, I give you my word as a gentleman, I'll pay you what you ask. Well, the man agreed to the terms, handed over the envelope. J.P. Morgan opened it, extracted a single sheet of paper, gave it one look, a mere glance, then handed the paper back to the man and wrote him a check for $25,000. There were two sentences on the page. Every morning, write a list of things that need to be done that day. Do them. Now, there are, just to elaborate that a little bit and save you most of that 25 grand, there are six crucial elements to map change. We're going to talk about how to understand and incorporate each of these six, which is an outline to master your money story. One is to regulate states of mind. State always comes first, and your state of mind determines the meaning that you attach to something, and the meaning you attach determines your behavior. So state is crucial. Dr. Vernon Smith won a Nobel Prize in economics in part by demonstrating how market bubbles are created. He did a series of trading experiments with economic graduate students. Now, these are graduate students. These are not undergraduates. They were informed the fair value of a security as $3. So these traders knew the actual worth of the security. This is a significant advantage over the normal Wall Street situation because the price in Wall Street, the stock market is really an auction, not a market, and the price is determined by what somebody's willing to bid for it. So what happened? They ran the price up significantly past the $3 mark. When other traders in the experiment stopped paying a premium, the laboratory market crashed. And this was almost at $6, like $5.92 as an average among several groups. In a second experiment, they would take the same group. They formed another smaller bubble. It crashed here at the high $4 range on average. It wasn't until the third time around that the investors wised up enough to stay with the security's actual value, even though they had known it from the start. When Dr. Smith repeated this experiment with finance professors and other economic specialists, they formed the same kinds of bubbles, not quite as exaggerated, followed by the same crashes. States of mind are like software programs. They're a mind-body state that determines how we perceive and then how we process information and how we respond. We each have a set of different states of mind: relaxation, alertness, anxiety, anger, centered attention, confidence. There's a blog that's archived at my blog site called Confident is a State of Mind that you might be interested in. A key element is to be aware of our different states of mind and know which state works best for what purpose. You know, for example, creative writing and editing. Two different states of mind, two different parts of the brain. Better to do one when you're in an optimum place to do that and not try to mix the two. When someone's in an emotional state, they're overbalanced toward right brain response, the feeling brain. And in extreme stress, the emotional brain can hijack the intellectual logical brain and totally hold it hostage. So what do? Your brain is working against you. When you're in any state of upset, the first order of business is to regulate feelings to restore a cool state, a balance of right and left brain. So the key is to get grounded and centered. So have some options ready to take a walk, wash your hands and face with cold water, breathe deeply, take a time out, even sleep on it. Let me think about that and get back to you is a decision. Then you can respond when your state of mind is balanced. The number two element to map changes. The power is in the focus. This is the neuroscience. Oh, let me say about the other. There's a lot about regulating states of mind that can be useful to mentor coaches. And just because of time, and this is away from the subject that we're talking about, I do a later teleseminar on master states of mind, and the mind and brain sciences. I don't remember right now when it is, but I'll be sure and send you a note about that, because I think this is the most important aspect of what we can do with our clients. Number two, the power is in the focus. This is the neuroscience and quantum mechanics behind the law of attraction. Thoughts have a frequency, an energy field. Focus selects that frequency, the frequency we want out of hundreds of possibilities. We transmit and receive a frequency through our thoughts. So if you want to change something in your life, change the frequency, change the channel, change your thoughts. Now, the bad news, if you think about what you don't want, it keeps showing up over and over. Now, according to quantum physics, we each generate energy frequencies or vibrations. We project energy in our emotions and thoughts that are the source of what and who we attract, as well as the basis of our sense of well-being. The quantum Zeno effect, Z-E-N-O, says the mental act of attention activates and holds in place brain circuitry. With consistent focus and repetition, these chemicals, these links, actually become stable changes in the brain structure. In other words, the brain rewires. Quantum physics offers us still another paradigm of this same principle. In addition to our individual energy field, there is a collective field, the quantum field of possibility. Einstein called this the unified field theory. Basically, he said the human individual mind and body is a bundle of energy that interacts with another person's energy field, as well as the collective energy field of a group. This is why emotion is so contagious. This is how we can read people, how we can focus our choices, and how we determine the flow of our future. So we project these frequencies like a magnet, and we attract what we focus on. There's an article under my articles tab called The Neuroscience Behind the Secret, and I'm going to refer you to that if you're interested in reading a little bit more about what I'm talking about right now that explains it a little bit better than I actually have time for right now. But basically, if you focus on the negative and on the problems, that's what you'll create. If you focus on the positive and on solutions, that'll be what you create. This concept offers explanation at a brain level for why a solution focus is more effective than a problem focus. These brain connections literally become mind maps and subsequently influence the reality that we see. So the paradox is we don't attract what we want. We attract what we focus on. Everybody wants more money, so wanting is not the key to having it. Focusing on scarcity attracts scarcity. Focusing on prosperity aligns your energy to pursue prosperity. Think of this. I was reminded of this a little over a year ago. I did the BMW Racing School in Greenville, South Carolina, and they had a principle of this. Like when you began to skid out and lose control on a turn, what do you focus on? You focus on the wall. What happens? You hit the wall. So you do things counterintuitively to address focusing on where you want to go, not what you're afraid of. So the power of focus, whatever you attend to or focus on, you align yourself to create. So be sure you focus on the right thing. Here are some bad examples. I want to get out of debt. Focuses on debt. I want to lose weight. Focuses on overweight. And here's one that kept a lot of dry cleaners busy. I want to be really careful and not spill something on this new outfit. Three, visualize changes. Now, there's a chapter called The Old Art and the New Science of Visualization in the addendum of your workbook. I'm not going to go over the basics here because there is a scientific way to create a vision that can be successful, and a vision can rewire your brain. There's also a systematic way to create affirmations, and affirmations are the stories that support the visualization. In other words, the mind software revision. So coupling these two can be very, very powerful. Four, insight changes the brain. At the moment of insight, an aha experience, a complex new set of neural connections is made. three different parts of the brain light up on fMRI scans during a moment of insight, an aha experience. And what this does, it releases chemicals that vault into a state that is more synthetic and creative and integrative. So while the brain pushes back like a two-year-old and has the error detection mechanism that say that says this is not right, I don't want to change, there's also this mechanism that our brains get excited by doing something new, by having an insight, by having an aha, and want to create more of that. That's why appreciative inquiry is so important in coaching. That's why helping clients have insights and create their own new story will work, and just giving information is not going to do much. So when someone's given information, a directive or an order, nothing happens. No part of the brain lights up. And as important as this insight-induced change is, it's the sustained attention that hardwires it into the brain circuit, the repetition. 5, take action. The world will not pay you for what you know or what you intend. It'll pay you for what you do. It rewards action. To analyze and plan are important, but payday comes with action. Winners develop a plan and set it into motion. It may not be perfect from the beginning, but they self-correct and keep moving forward, learning from mistakes and producing results. This is why a group of some of the brightest people anywhere with all kinds of degrees can plan and figure out something, but continue to try to make it perfect and struggle to make it happen. Meanwhile, the action-oriented guy who has a plan and acts on it and proceeds organically, the guy who almost finished the second semester of the first year of community college, owns a bunch of real estate on the west side of town. 6, transform identity. We're going to talk about this as we revisit the last step of the roadmap of program new identity. A new experience or idea must be focused on consistently and frequently. When attention is consistent, brain circuitry is stabilized. The mindset of identity then incorporates the new experience and integrates it as part of an evolving self, as a component of one's identity. Otherwise, it's not integrated and prone to be dismissed as a not me or attributed to luck or circumstance. The most powerful force of the human psyche is to return to our core identity. So that means whenever we facilitate a change in a client or create a change ourselves, unless we revise the model of who we are and how we are and transform that core identity and reprogram it at that level, we'll revert back to where we were before. So change has to be coupled with internal change and evolution and transformation of identity that parallels the external changes. So to summarize here, an application of steps 4 and 5, deciding and mapping change, applied to your debt story. I recommend doing the 3 exercises under debt story in step 5, beginning page 5.10. And here's an example of debt cycle stealth. You can fulfill a desire you didn't know you had by spending money you don't have. You can define yourself by acquisitions not paid for. You can even borrow based on how much money you'll be lended rather than how much money you can pay back. Spending money generates the perception, both by the spender and the observer, of having money. Fulfilling a wish creates the desire. Marketers know this. When desires define identity, the quest can become unrelenting. Many people who fall heavily into debt do not necessarily have psychological problems, but because spending takes on a life of its own. With spending, the chase is on. They then try to afford what they buy. And money can never buy what it represents emotionally. And it's hard to save because of the way our minds work and our brains are wired. It's hard to resist the immediate pleasure, the dopamine spike of anticipating buying. It activates the same pleasure center in the brain that dopamine does. In fact, it does create a spike of dopamine. spending money is addictive. It changes a state of mind. And it's difficult to substitute a theory like future need, long-term saving, retirement, for the immediate. So the most common way we're short-sighted in our decision-making is that we choose a small amount of something right now rather than a larger amount in the future. So here are some possibilities to counter those tendencies. Neuroeconomist Ben Seymour at University College of London has shown that imagining a future purpose, a future purchase, has the same effect in the brain as getting it, and that saving is easier when it's for something specific that can be envisioned. For example, it's easier and more specific to create a distinct vision for each goal, such as a vacation, a college tuition, a new house. Another, tangibly calculate the cost of debt so that it becomes real figures. Another, tangibly, concretely represent the magic of compound interest. Figure out the money that you spend, what it would be worth in 5 years, at 10 years, at retirement. Here's a simple example. If you invest $1.50 a day, beginning at age 20, based on the stock market average growth since 1926, by age 65, that will be worth $1 million. You wait until age 21 instead of 20, the difference is $109,000. And here's another. If you invest $2,000 per year in an IRA beginning at age 18, then stop all investing by age 30, by age 65, $1 million. And another, as I mentioned, automatically deduct retirement savings each month. This commitment device is a decision you only have to make once. And remember also how credit cards segment the pleasure of spending from the pain of future payment, two different parts of the brain. Then our optimism bias makes rainy days and repayments an abstraction. Rationalization heightens the proportion of those elastic boundaries. Payoff in 3 months may stretch to 6 or 12. Increasing abstraction of money emotionally distances the obligation of debt. A faceless credit card company becomes a vague authority. Remember we talked about if someone uses a credit card instead of actual cash or check, they end up spending 23% more. A recent economic study showed that credit card holders are consciously aware of only $4 of every 10 they owe. And that means actually aware even when questioned. When they're under oath, they only are aware of four. This underestimation is a form of denial. Debt has been called a secret sin because of the shame that's attached. Now, here's what one expert had to say. This is Uncle Junior to his nephew, Tony Soprano. You know, your father and me started that poker game over 30 years ago. We were talking one day about how the credit card companies, you know, they work their angle. Hell, they don't care what you bought as long as you don't pay all at once. They juice you to death, and you thank them for letting you have a card. You'd rather be juiced than pay it all at once. It's a certain kind of player. That's why we call it the executive game. We render money an abstraction and deceive ourselves. I can do it on my credit card, so it won't be an immediate expense. And as Richard Medley said, free money makes you stupid. Remember this from everything we talked about in this seminar and everything you just heard. Right now, saving and the future are both abstractions. There will be a time when they both become very real. Okay, we're in discussion mode. Unfortunately, we don't have a long time, but any questions or thoughts, anything you'd like to talk about, just briefly now.
This is Sally Herndon.
Hey, Sally, welcome.
Thanks. There's a lot of it's a lot of interesting things that, you know, when you put them, when you really think about them in an objective way, it's like almost everything just kind of comes together. And particularly like the when you look at the obstacle as that you've created and you look at it in that way, it's just the dynamic.
And that's very true. And when you think about it this way, that's exactly what we do in coaching. We help someone see the simplicity of something so that they can then see all the complexity that's been attached.
I repito.
And sometimes, just for example, it's like getting all torqued up and into all kind of complexities about a divorce proceeding and about all the aspects of a divorce, when simply most of the decisions need to be a simple business decision segmented from all emotional issues. It's important to deal with the emotional issues, but the business aspects need to be dealt with as business in their simplicity. Then that can help you see all the other issues for what they are as well. So, Sally, was there anything else you wanted to add to that?
I think I did. I mean, it's interesting in how every time I'm thinking about all of these, because you had mentioned there's a lot of things that I'm trying to improve upon in my personal life as well. One of them being weight, which I've struggled with for and my entire life, and looking at that as almost simultaneously the same thing, and going, huh, I do that quite regularly, and it's such a common thing that we do when we're talking about trying to change old habits. It's
uh-huh.
us looking through our own fingers because it's the poll. So that's pretty much, it's fascinating how it all applies.
It is. And this,
several different
this
things.
Is how when I had an eating disorders treatment program in the early 80s, one of the only two in the country, this is how I became aware of so many money symptoms. I did the
he
first
had
paper on
eating disorder program
shopping because that's what so many of the people had.
Did you give them the
dual symptom picture?
No, money is off.
Talking, and I hope you're more interested. Could I get a mute, please? One just quick thing. Two things. One is to lose weight, you have to have a plan, stick to it. And secondly, if you are totally present whenever you eat for each bite, you will never overeat again. Just to think about. Thank you all very much. I look forward to picking you up right here next time. Keep those cards and letters coming in if you have comments or questions. Talk to you now. Bye.
Good night. Thank you. Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye.